Hello, podcast. This is your host, Ryan Van Wyk, back with another episode. Now we're up to 55 for podcast. I had posted I think there's a few things I want to get to anyway. A movie review and then a video I had put up on YouTube a few days ago, or a couple days ago anyway. Some videos, depending on the heading that you put for your video on YouTube, some of them will just explode with with views. I had put up a video the other day about DMX's death, and it took 2 days, and all it took for 2 days was to get 162 views. That's one of the best views I've had for a video, even within 2 days. Sometimes my videos within a week, sometimes they just don't gain views, and some do. But even with DMX dying, I knew that was going to be the talk of the town. Basically, it was all over the news, newspapers, everything like that. He did have a hard life, I said, with the drugs and everything, but his music is what's gonna stand out. So with him dying, it was actually heartbroken for me because I actually like DMX as an actor, and because not only was he an actor, but he also rapped too. But he was known for his rapping and his acting. Those are the two things he was known for. So, but when I posted up his video of his death, that video just exploded. But it took 2 days for that to happen. Now I had went to Meijer the other day and brought a whole bunch of movies. I've gotten through at least two, but I'm starting on the third one right now. I had watched the movie Midway, which is based on World War II. It was centered on an attack by the Japanese. Originally, back in 1941, the Japanese had bombed Pearl Harbor. And then, about 6 months to the date that they bombed Pearl Harbor, they tried to launch an attack on another carrier thing called Midway, but that backfired. Now, the movie was praised for its historical accuracy, but many people had criticized the film, or they received mixed reviews, but they said the historical accuracy was right, which is good. Because when you're portraying a movie that has history to it, or like a storyline, if you're going to do a storyline on a movie, and it's going to be based on a true story, you want to get the historical accuracy right. Then I finished up Godzilla yesterday, the Godzilla vs. The Godzilla King of the Monsters. Now, there is another Godzilla movie that was released 2 weeks ago called Godzilla vs. Kong. Now, from what I looked up on the Godzilla film series, the Godzilla film series has 36 different movies in the series, which is a fucking a lot, which is fucking a lot. So I've never seen all of them. I did see the one that they made in 98, and then I saw the one that they just released, the one that they released called the Godzilla King of Monsters, and then the newest one that was released 2 weeks ago I haven't seen yet. But when it comes out on DVD, I'm gonna buy it. But there's 36 movies, with the first one being released in 54, and then all the way down. There was 32 that were filmed in Japan. And the last four are the ones in 98, 2014, 2019, and the most recent one. Those are all made in the US. But I got through the Godzilla movie yesterday. It does have an all-star cast. In the movie Godzilla, the one I watched, the King of the Monsters, it stars O'Shea Jackson Jr., which is Ice Cube's son. Then it stars Millie Bobby Brown, Kyle Chandler, Vera Farmiga, and Aisha Hinds, among several other people. Same thing with the movie Midway that had an all-star cast too. You had Woody Harrelson, Patrick Wilson, Dennis Quaid. Then you had Aaron Eckhart, one of the Jonas Brothers. I think it was Nick Jonas. Let me see here. And then you had Mandy Moore, and a few other people in the film. It's around somewhere. I just don't feel like looking for it right now, but yeah. I'm still gonna have to try to get my new tablet. But obviously haven't gotten the money for that yet. Now to move on to my next movie. I can't do a review on that yet because I just started watching it, so it's gonna take 2 hours and 15 minutes to watch the whole movie. But I brought a Tom Clancy collection. Even though these movies are based off the books that he had wrote, But I started watching The Hunt for Red October. Never seen it, but obviously, I've always been a big fan of Tom Clancy books. But this one has the series. Has like five movies, like a five movie collection for the Jack Ryan series. One is called The Hunt for Red October, which is the one I'm watching. Then you got Patriot Games, Clear and Present Danger, The Sum of All Fears, and the most recent one that they had made called Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit. That was like 7 years ago. But yeah, those are the ones I'm watching right now. And then at 2:30 I gotta meet a doctor's appointment, not the fact that I want to, but that's just how it is. There is such thing, and I know that when Trump was squatting in the White House, they had people called Never Trumpers, which means they could have been in the Republican Party, but they didn't support Trump, basically. Now this one, it's called Biden Republicans, meaning that you're part of the Republican Party, but you support what Biden is doing. At least some people do, not all. Raleigh, North Carolina, says Jay Copen doesn't hide his disregard for the modern Republican Party. He's been a solid Republican voter for the past 40 years. The 69-year-old quickly regretted casting his 2016 ballot for Donald Trump. Yeah, that's a big mistake that he basically, When Trump was up for re-election last year, Copen had appeared on roadside billboards across North Carolina urging the other Republicans to back Democratic rival Joe Biden. Nearly 3 months into the new administration, Copen considers himself a Biden Republican, relieved by the new president's calmer leadership style and coronavirus vaccine distribution efforts. Copen is the type of voter that Biden is counting on as he pushes an agenda that's almost universally opposed by the Republicans in Washington. As Biden meets today with a bipartisan group of lawmakers to discuss his massive infrastructure plan, he's betting that the GOP's elected leaders are making a political miscalculation. The party's base remains overwhelmingly loyal to Trump. Don't know why, because he fucked them all over. But Biden believes that the Republican leaders are overlooking everyday Americans eager for a compromise and an action. The question is whether there are enough Republicans at Copen. I really want there to be a good two-party system, said Copen, who's a former senior officer with the American Gas Association. His vote for Biden, his vote for Biden as president was his first ballot for a Democrat since Jimmy Carter in 1976, but probably won't be his last either. I think there's a lot of people like me out there. The ranks of Republican crossovers may be smaller than we would expect, but only 8% of Republicans voted Democratic in November's the presidential race last year, according to the AP VoteCast, a survey of the electorate nationwide. If there's any Republicans voting for Biden, they were not voting for Biden. They're just Never Trumpers, said Philip Stevens, who was a former Democrat, but he's now a Republican vice chairman in Robeson County, which is about 90 miles south of Raleigh. The county twice voted for Barack Obama before it went for Trump in 2016 and again last year. But in Biden's early months, Stevens sees the president catering more to the left than to conservative Democratic voters. During last year's campaign, Biden at times courted the Republicans at the risk of alienating the Democratic left. Several prominent Republicans got speaking positions during the Democratic National Convention, such as former Ohio Governor John Kasich. A number of Republican groups also openly backed Biden, but the Republican voters against Trump spent $2 million on billboards in swing states that were featuring Republicans opposed to re-electing their own party's squatter. That's how Copen's beaming and bespectacled image, which was 12 feet high, ended up on billboards with the words "I'm conservative, I value decency, but I'm voting for Biden." As president, Biden has expressed openness to work with the Republicans, but obviously they haven't really helped with him. But he also helped ram through Congress the largest expansion of the social safety net in a generation as part of a coronavirus relief and stimulus package that didn't get a single Republican vote. He's now calling for spending trillions more on infrastructure and pushing a proposal meant to appeal to people in both parties. Biden has so far enjoyed a wide, relatively bipartisan support, with 73% of Americans approving of his coronavirus response and 60% approving of his handling of the economy. Still favorable ratings don't always translate to votes, but of the more than 200 counties that supported Obama in 2012 and Trump in 2016, only about 25 went back to Biden in November. The limited crossover power is even true in places that were bright spots for the Democrats, but Biden flipped the longtime Republican stronghold Kent County, Michigan, which includes Grand Rapids, which was Gerald Ford's hometown. But those gains were built more on the local electorate getting younger than any measurable surge of conservatives back in Biden anyway. Jill Farrington, who ran for Congress as a working-class Republican and owns a bar in Lyons, Michigan, about 50 miles, which is about 50 miles east of Grand Rapids in Ionia, I'm not sure if I'm saying that right, Ionia County, where Trump won nearly two-thirds of the vote, but during a candidate's debate, he called Trump an idiot, which he is, and finished fourth in a five-way primary race. He says Biden is doing the right thing on infrastructure, social issues, and the environment, but still Farrington said he'll remain loyal to the Republican Party no matter what, even if he runs for Congress again in 2022, in opposition to much of what it stands for. He says we need to change it from within, he says. Scott Carey, who's a former general counsel of the Tennessee Republican Party, wrote an op-ed in October saying that he was voting for Biden. He's been mostly satisfied so far, but he's not about to become a born-again Democrat. He worries about tax increases and government overreach. He says, I don't see myself becoming a big Harris or certainly a Bernie fan for anything like that. But Kerry said of the Vice President Kamala Harris and Democratic Senator or the independent Senator Bernie Sanders, if Biden decides not to seek a second term in 2024, Kerry said he'd be more excited about Republicans, including some governors that I've never even heard of, who would step up the post-Trump era and bring us back to sound governing policies. Others, though, say that they left the GOP for good. Tom Rawls, who's an ex-Republican county supervisor in Maricopa County, which includes Phoenix and was critical in the Biden-carrying swing state, Arizona, after voting for Biden, Rawls registered as a Democrat. He said he'd rather fight philosophy within the Democratic Party than. He said, because there's none. He says he rather he says he'd rather fight philosophically within the Democratic Party than he would for the character in the Republican Party, because there's no character in the Republican Party at all. The guy is Rawls is 71 and said he doesn't expect the GOP, to return to any principles he could support in his lifetime because they don't have any. Rawls and his wife spent months before the election sitting in their driveway along a busy suburban Phoenix Road, hoisting Biden signs for 4 hours a day. Others had made rude gestures or screamed that they were interlopers from the fiercely blue California. Some people would yell at them to go home. And Rawls recalled saying that he and basically Rawls would say that we're in our driveway. Where do you want us to go? Which is kind of true in a way. I said, where would you expect them to go if they're in their fucking driveway? So supposedly Biden's supposed to meet with the infrastructure team to decide exactly what they're gonna pass in his infrastructure and what they're not gonna pass. I don't know where the hell the Republicans are even getting this percentage, but they're claiming that only 5% of the bill goes to infrastructure, and I think it's more than that. Oh, this is pretty cool. I haven't read comics in years, but I know I got a few of them around. Even though this story was last week, so I'm kind of behind on it, but still it's news. One of the few copies of the comic book that introduced Superman to the world has sold for a supersized record-setting price. The issue of Action Comics went number one, for 3 million, with for 3.25 million in a private sale. Called the ComicConnect.com, which is an online auction and consignment company, announced on Tuesday. It narrowly bested the previous record for the comic set in the auction of another copy in 2014 for slightly over 3.2 million. The comic was published back in 1938, which really is the beginning of the superhero genre, said the ComicConnect.com COO Vincent Zerwalo. Zerzolo, who basically brokered the sale. It told readers about the origins of Superman and how he came to Earth from another planet and then went by the name Clark Kent. The seller of this particular issue brought the comic in 2018 for slightly more than $2 million at that time, but Zerzolo said that while there were hundreds of thousands of copies initially published, it's estimated that only about 100 exist today, and they're in varying conditions. And he said this copy is among the best kept ones. But there's no comic book that you could value higher in terms of a comic book than Action Comics number one. Let's go to this one here. And some people are calling Biden's, now this is only like a few minutes read, but let's see what they're talking about here. It says that, people are calling, Biden's infrastructure plan a power grab. Okay, let's read this here and see what they're talking about. When President Joe Biden recently announced a $2.3 trillion spending plan on the heels of the nearly $2 trillion bill that was enacted in March, some Democrats in Washington had complained, and their complaint was that the price tag was not big enough and that the Washington power grab was not ambitious enough. Now, these are the same folks who, since taking back the majority in the U.S. House of Representatives in 2018, had presided over roughly $9 trillion being added to the national debt, which is more than the combined deficits under all previous 72 years of Republican majorities in the House. At $2.3 trillion, the cost of what President Biden is proposing for his infrastructure plan is four times what the country spent in today's dollars to build the national interstate highway system. Currently, Biden will never be able to spend enough to satisfy the Washington Democrats, but that does not mean that he would not try. But instead of looking out for the country's working class and working in a bipartisan fashion on a targeted and cohesive transportation and infrastructure plan, the President Biden has produced a massive laundry list of policies that will further entrench Washington politicians in the lives and livelihoods of the public. Less than 6%. Actually, this is I'm see, this is where the Republicans are getting it from. I think it would be more actually than that. The Republicans are claiming that less than 6% of Biden's $2.3 trillion plan goes towards roads and bridges, and less than 2% goes to upgrade and repair America's waterways, lakes, dams, ports, and airports. And while the Biden administration likes to cite expanding broadband as a priority, an idea that has bipartisan support, the administration devotes less than 5% of funding to it. But in fact, the President Biden's plan would spend 74% more on subsidies for electric vehicles than for the broadband. Non-infrastructure items make up most of the plan. Among them, $400 billion goes to expand Medicaid because of the Democrats' never-ending quest to grow the government-controlled healthcare program. But there is $50 billion for a new office at the U.S. Department of Commerce because of the Democrats' never-ending quest to grow the government in general. But there is $10 billion for a civilian climate corps, and an additional $100 billion in funding for schools, with of course no requirement. With no requirement that they reopen their doors anytime soon. President Biden's plan would even dictate how workers organize and unionize by overturning the right to work laws in 27 states across the country. But increasing federal command and control is ultimately the goal, but using taxpayer dollars to make families, companies, and communities further dependent on Washington, a conversation about that would be an honest version of the debate that is unfolding. We already know that Washington Democrats are not going to be satisfied with this $2.3 trillion in spending, but the Biden administration has previewed that a third, roughly $2 trillion, is coming in short order, and this one will apparently require even more social engineers than the structural engineers. All the spending will be accompanied by hundreds of billions in borrowing and trillions of dollars in tax increases, the last thing that a growing economy and growing generations need. But borrowing money empowers the Chinese Communist Party, which owns a sizable portion of the country's debt already. But pulling money out of the economy and out of the pockets of the public to launder through the Washington machine and push back the bait and push back out based on political parties only further benefits the political class at the expense of the working class. It also will invariably materializes the lower wages for workers, heavier burdens on small businesses, and fewer jobs in America. The Biden administration might try to sell its plan as roads, bridges, and broadband, but the numbers do not lie. When it comes to investing in the country's infrastructure, repairing roads and bridges are used to be the point. Now it is merely just a talking point. Man, yeah. YouTube has just banned has YouTube just put a ban on Sebastian Gorka's channel for repeated violations of the presidential election integrity policy. After repeated violations of YouTube's presidential election integrity policy, the video platform had terminated the channel for radio host Sebastian Gorka, who was a one-time aide to the former squatter Donald Trump. Gorka's show, which is titled America First, was removed sometime over the past week. The Washington Examiner can confirm it was live as recently as Thursday, But the show features right-wing commentary on politics to be the new front lines in the ongoing culture war against the Democrats, according to a description on Apple Podcast. In accordance with our long-standing strike system, we terminated the channel America First with Sebastian Gorka for repeated violations of our presidential election integrity policy. This is what Ivy Choi, who's a YouTube spokesperson, told the Washington Examiner on Sunday. As we've shared publicly, our presidential election integrity policy prohibits content uploaded after last year's safe harbor deadline that alleges widespread fraud or errors that were ch that or errors that changed the outcome of the 2020 U.S. presidential election. Any channel that violates this policy will receive a strike, and channels that receive three strikes in the same 90-day period are permanently removed from YouTube, as in the case of America First with Sebastian Gorka. It's unclear which videos violated the policy, but one possibly is an episode that was posted to Rumble, a Canadian video platform that conservatives have turned to as an alternative to YouTube on Saturday, and can still be seen there. The video was titled "Can We Stop the Next Steal?" because there really wasn't a steal in the election anyway. So Joe D. Geneva and Victoria Tosing on America First with Sebastian Gorka featured commentary on all the ways that the 2020 election was stolen from the squad of Trump, which it really wasn't. But YouTube warns users that it will remove any content uploaded after the safe harbor deadline, and the last day for states to name electors who cannot be challenged by Congress, in which there are allegations of the widespread voter fraud in the 2020 election, which there really wasn't any. The platform has a three-strike policy for repeated violations. If an account receives three strikes in a consecutive 90-day period, the channel will be permanently removed from the site. And a first strike results in a 1 week suspension, a second strike recalls a 2 week suspension, and a third strike results in termination from YouTube. YouTube says that it is against the platform's terms of service to open other channels or avoid a suspension by using another after a channel is terminated. And this is not the first time that Gorka's channel has seen a YouTube account terminated. Back in 2019, he had another channel, and the channel was terminated due to the fact that he had copyright infringement, that he had multiple copyright infringement violations. The violations stemmed from Gorka's refusal to stop using the Imagine Dragons song "Radioactive" in the introduction to America First. Several other prominent Republicans have seen also bans of some kind of YouTube in recent months, including the former squatter's lawyer, the former squatter Trump's lawyer, Rudy Caluti, and the former squatter himself. Gorka did not immediately respond to the Washington Examiner's request for comment, though. But he went, well, actually, he wouldn't be wrong. But CNN's Jim Acosta comes really close to calling Tucker Carlson a Ku Klux Klansman, which he wouldn't be wrong about because he supports that anyway. But CNN's Jim Acosta took a swift swipe Saturday at Tucker Carlson and his most recent racist preachings by indicating that the faux host should spell his first name with more than one K, with more than one K, an apparent allusion to the Ku Klux Klan. This is hardly the first time that Tucker Carlson, I'm not sure why he spells Tucker with just one K, and has been accused of making racist comments, Acosta said. He was talking with Brian Stelter, CNN's media correspondent, about the uproar over Carlson peddling the notorious white supremacist great replacement conspiracy theory on Faux, and wondered if the network will again refuse to take any action against Carlson. But check out the controversy in the video. Carlson complained on Thursday that he was being outvoted at the ballot box and blamed it on the white replacement via a shadowy plot to recruit immigrants in the third world. He insisted it wasn't a racist complaint, but an issue of voting rights because his candidates don't always win. And why should I sit back and take that? The white supremacist replacement theory claims that an elite cabal, including Jews, are deliberately recruiting immigrants of color to undermine the white domination. And the white Christian culture, the belief has fueled racist mass shootings in the U.S. and elsewhere, like the neo-Nazi marching in Charlottesville, Virginia, back in August of 2017. We're referring to the fear-mongering theory when they chanted, "Jews will not replace us." The Daily Show chillingly called Carlson a mass shooter copycat, ready, after he echoed the same sentiments written in manifestos about the shooters in El Paso, which resulted in 22 people being killed, and the Christchurch in New Zealand, where 51 people were killed in 2019. The Anti-Defamation League has called for Carlson's firing, and his full-on support to the white supremacist theory was not just a dog whistle to racists, but it was a bullhorn, and it was basically a stated a letter Friday from the ADL to Faux, and Faux has not responded. Stelter had called Tucker Carlson the face of Faux, and the poster child for what CNN contributor Van Jones called 5 years ago, the white lash. And this white resistance to a changing country. Carlson has a lot of viewers who seem to be with him, and Faux was not going to take any action against him, Stelter told Acosta. But the faux owning Murdoch family not only tolerates Carlson because he's racist, but it embraces him and his racism, Stelter said. But also, Acosta just said is that fucker is also just a fucking whack job, which he is. And I don't even know how the hell Faux can be considered news because they're really not. There's actually a story going around that people were saying that if Biden doesn't run for re-election in 2024, that people were saying that Dwayne Johnson should run, which I would actually openly endorse him. Corporate America is still delusional about what the GOP has become and what it stands for. The GOP corporate America used to know is know and love is basically gone. What we have now is an angrier GOP, which is willing to push them, willing to punish the companies that disagree with them. It's un-American and it has nothing to do with the free market, but apparently the base likes it. That means, sorry, the old GOP went out to get a pack of smokes and it ain't coming back. This is an opinion column, and the thoughts are expressed of those of the author. Corporations need to hear this, and probably a few half-hearted Republicans do too. The former House Speaker John Boehner's GOP isn't coming back anytime soon. Boehner was perhaps the last leader of a now-dead Republican Party that we used to know, the one that was born during the Reagan years, the GOP that kept its hands out of the affairs of private enterprise, that championed free speech, that knew how to cut a deal, and that you might want to have a glass of Merlot and a cigar with that GOP's gone. Instead, we have a GOP that has no problem interfering with private business decisions, but Governors DeSantis of Florida and Greg Abbott of Texas, for example, had just signed a legislation prohibiting the private companies from requiring a vaccination passport from customers. Instead, we have a GOP that punishes companies that do not share its political beliefs. But in Georgia, the state house voted to strip the Atlanta-based Delta Airlines, of a $35 million fuel tax credit because it spoke out against a law that would make it harder for people to get to the polls. After decades of advocating for corporations to have more political power, the Senate Minority Leader Moscow Mitch warned companies to stay out of politics, only to somewhat walk it back after remembering who his donors are. Some corporations like the company JetBlue, which just restarted donations to Republicans who voted against the certification of election on January 6, are trying to get back to business as usual, but instead they should be getting ready to play defense. And what these GOP corporations are likely to become, they're likely to become a collateral damage as every issue devolves into total culture war. Yes, the Democrats want to raise corporate taxes, but the Republicans have no problem punishing companies when they stand up for basic functions of our democracy, like easy access to voting, and that the party now happens to oppose. That's the choice for corporations now. All of this stands in contrast to a recently published expert of Boehner's soon-to-be-released memoir, which is an account of a man watching his party go insane. According to him, in 2010, as the party was radicalizing, a total moron, they were radicalizing a total moron, and to get elected just by having an R next to their name. He described the birtherism movement, the wind beneath the wings of Donald Trump's political aspirations, as truly a nutcase, and all of it, he said, made it nearly impossible to cut deals with the Obama administration. This isn't to say that Boehner's isn't partly responsible for what the GOP has become, but it's telling that he has written a memoir that marks a line in the sand between the GOP that he presided over and the one that coalesced under Trump. He knows that the GOP post Boehner era is an assemblage of everything that pushed him out of Washington on steroids. That's a, kind of another way to put it, but part of what Trump added to the truly nuts was pure rage. In an excerpt published by the Punchbowl News, not something I've ever heard of, but Boehner said that after he shared a round of golf with Trump, it was the future squatter's anger that stood out to him the most. A staffer accidentally told Trump and Boehner the wrong names of two men playing golf with them. And Boehner had shrugged it off, but Trump eviscerated the staffer publicly in a way that took Boehner's that took Boehner aback. We had no idea that when that, that we had no idea then what that anger would do to our country. And he had that Boehner had wrote, even with Trump gone, but good riddance. But the politics of anger he brought to the fore to the fore to the forefront has remained with the GOP. He says, we are just getting a sense of how it is settling in our politics now, and corporations would not be left unscathed. But politically motivated consumer boycotts have been an American pastime for both parties for generations. But today's GOP has shown unwillingness to dole out legislative punishment to corporations for what should be relatively uncontroversial political statements in a way that we have not seen before in this nation, embracing the totality of you're either with us or you're against us. But right now, the GOP and corporate America have a similar problem with Biden's proposed infrastructure and tax legislation plan, and the deals are popular up to a point. A Reuters poll found that 79% of Americans support a government overhaul of the American roadways, railroad bridges, and ports. 71% support a plan to get high-speed internet to everyone. Over 65% supports replacing the lead pipes and creating what they call the tax credit for green energy. Americans are also supportive of raising the corporate taxes. A Pew Research poll found that 62% of Americans are bothered a lot by how little the tax corporations are paying, and that is to say, and that is to say, headlines about Biden raising, that Biden raising the corporate taxes in order to improve America's airports are unlikely to upset many Americans anyway. Now corporations will try to deal with this problem in the traditional way by sending their lobbyists to Capitol Hill. The GOP has found another way to deal, the GOP has found another way to deal with the disconnect between its policies and their popularity, which they're not really popular anyway, by staying laser focused on anger and never ending culture war. Faux has launched, but Faux has launched two new shows that are centered around cancel culture, because that's what excites its sycophantic inbred viewers. And the loudest GOP politicians with the most obvious aspirations for the squadency have decided that punishing corporations for being on the wrong side of any hot-button issue is a political win with their base. That is why corporations should get used to the reality that this is not just a phase. The Republican Party requires a major adjustment to go back to what it was. Instead, it is becoming more populist and more radical. If you want to know in what direction the GOP is headed, look no further than the man who will go anywhere the wind is blowing, Florida Senator Marco Rubio, who was once a protege of the Bush family and now has social media as chock-a-block with culture war video rants that sounded like an audition for a primetime slot on Faux. Recently, he blasted Major League Baseball's decision, which is triggered by the aforementioned voting law, to move their All-Star game out of Atlanta. Rubio decided to hit back at MLB by ranting about its business dealings with China and Cuba, and obviously lacking the self-awareness to realize that at this very moment, the Chinese Communist Party is harassing companies for their political and human rights stance as well. The GOP may not raise corporate taxes, but it now behooves it to attack corporate interest in other ways. The Missouri Senator dumbass Josh Hawley, who's a young man who's had quite a lot of success on fundraising after helping to incite the January 6th Capitol riot, had tweeted about punishing woke companies using the antitrust legislations to break them up. He says, I needn't tell you that punishing companies for taking political stance is not what which is not what antitrust legislation is for. This is the direction that the Republican Party is moving in, and remember that it did not represent the platform during the 2020 presidential election. It did not reiterate a belief in the free market or free speech or any small government or democracy. All it had was Donald Trump and the anger that blew John Boehner and his GOP away. It's time to come to terms with this. Yep. Okay, that should be enough there. One second. When it, okay, this is a good one. When it comes to gun violence in America, can we start by agreeing that there is a problem, and can we agree that it is complicated and that there is room for a debate as to causes and solutions, and then no, and that no, not one action will solve the problem, but can we agree that positive steps are being taken in some states and that real change will take time? Hopefully, a future generation will be looking in the rearview mirror when it comes to the culture we have created and accepted. In the meantime, there is new hope as we have moved from a squatter whose refrain was "They're trying to take away your guns" to a president who's taken this public health crisis seriously, using words like embarrassing and an epidemic to describe it. It is our responsibility to keep the pressure up and the tension on this issue by electing more members of Congress who will take this embarrassing epidemic seriously. Since voting is a constitutional right and the Democrats are pushing to allow voting without identification, then applying the same logic to firearm ownership, which too is a constitutional right, should people be able to purchase a gun without any identification? I hope that all the legislators who talk about the sanctity of life and oppose a woman's freedom to control her own body would take that same concern for the sanctity of life and support sensible gun control. To do otherwise is pure hypocrisy. Yeah, I was looking at this the other day because my job is having this problem too, especially in this in the town of Indiana. On April 11th, which happens to be yesterday, thousands of jobs are available in multiple regions, including in Clark and Champaign counties, despite the ongoing effects of the pandemic recession. However, many employers are facing a familiar problem. They're having trouble finding and keeping what they call skilled workers. We are in a bad place in terms of the local labor market, said Ross McGregor, who's the president of a company called Pentaflex, which is a manufacturing company in Springfield. And this comes at a time when employers are trying to recruit and maintain workers who have a desired skill, especially in the manufacturing business. McGregor said that he can be a diff that can be a difficult task as those workers are limited and highly sought after. However, the issue is not just limited to skilled laborers, but McGregor said his company is also having difficulty filling the entry-level position. Right now, the big challenge is finding people who are reliable and who will come to work every day and put in that effort. Similar concerns in the region that are related to labor needs to have to the labor needs have led to an intense focus on training tied in tra that are tied to the in-demand jobs, providing everything from basic job hunting to high-tech skills. That type of training is not just focused on manufacturing, but there also is a high demand for healthcare training, including registered nurses, licensed practical nurses, respiratory therapists, and medical billing, coding, and administration. But high demand also exists for commercial truck driver for the commercial driver license training, like the CDL. The CDL program at Clark State College has been operating at half capacity due to the pandemic. However, the college is continuing to put graduates into the workforce, even though space is limited in its commercial transportation training center due to the pandemic. Before the pandemic hit, the college was training 10 to 12 students per month in the program, which is offered every month, according to representative of Clark State. The college is now working to build its capacity back to the pre-pandemic level. The pipeline of new drivers into the industry is significantly less because of the pandemic, said Bob Costello, who's a chief economist for the American Trucking Association. We've trained between 30 and 50% fewer drivers in 2020 than we did in 2019. The CDL industry lost about 45,000 drivers when a new online clearinghouse started last January, informing companies when a driver had failed a drug or alcohol test, he said. Ads for drivers of heavy and tractor trailer trucks were the most common online job listing in the last 12 months for the Jobs Ohio West region that includes Clark and Champaign counties. That comes from data compiled from the state's OhioMainsJobs.com online portal for the 30-day period that ended on January 13th. There's lots of jobs in trucking, Costello said, but pay is absolutely going to go up. If you've been in the industry for over a year, you should be making $55,000 if you want, if not more. But registered nurses are the second most common online job listing, followed by software developers, retail sales supervisors, and retail salespersons. The state's website has nearly 25,000 job listings for the area, but some are duplicates and not all companies post ads there, according to the Ohio Department of Job and Family Services. There is always a need for nursing staff. There is particularly a need for critical care nurses, said Sarah Hackenbrack, who's a president and chief executive of the Greater Dayton Area Hospital Association. But particularly due to COVID-19, we are seeing a need for the emergency room staff, specifically nurses. The pandemic curtailed the nursing institute instruction, but students have returned to clinical rotations at most facilities. Hospitals are working with education partners to address the impacts the coronavirus restrictions may have had on nursing students, such as additional hands-on training for those who completed some coursework in a virtual environment. But training programs proliferate across the region. The programs exist for companies to train current and prospective employees, retraining for people who've lost jobs, internships, and apprentices, for adults and high school care technology programs. Local colleges and universities are increasingly bolstering their traditional offerings with training for non-degree, what they call industry-recognized credentials. The two-year colleges are the quick reaction team, said the retired Air Force Colonel Cassie Barlow, who's now president of the Southwestern Ohio Council for Higher Education. We're seeing, basically, but basically she was seeing, with our 4 years where they are offering certifications and digital badges and other things along with the degree. Interviews with two dozen local and national experts found that one of the biggest challenges that one made more difficult during the pandemic is getting the word out about training programs and finding job opportunities and picking careers that offer a good paying job. I see all the initiatives that are going on around upskilling and making sure students are focused on the right majors, Barlow said. But that's why I'm also positive about it and so passionate about it. Manufacturers' top concern is finding enough skilled workers, said Angelia Erbal, who's president of the Dayton Region Manufacturers Association. The group is using a state apprenticeship an apprenticeship grant to increase the number of people earning credentials and working with local school and with the local high schools and colleges to add programs for the industry. Recognized production technician certification. The industry-recognized credentials ensure that the credential holder has the skills needed to do the job, and it gives the credential holder a leg up in the hiring and onboarding process, Erbal said. But places like Clark State have partnered with local companies in order to provide the additional training and certifications to employees. Pentaflex, which makes components for the heavy trucking industry, has utilized some of these opportunities. McGregor said the company offers internal training to upskill any employer or any employee, but he added that external options are helpful in areas such as welding and machining. McGregor said lessons around robotics and automation will become increasingly important as well, since those skills are being utilized more in the manufacturing field. He did add that local companies will be looking to educational partners to help provide opportunities related to those types of training. But Amy Donahoe, who's the director of workforce development with the Greater Springfield Partnership, said that these training opportunities are a huge component in growing the local workforce. She said that those programs, especially those that deal with manufacturing skills, offer employers a chance to upskill the current employees and grow talent from within, as some have been struggling to find qualified candidates to fill the what they call the more skilled positions. Ohio basically bested its goal of awarding funding for 10,000 industry-recognized credentials annually under the new Tech Cred program, which approved funding for 19,841 technology-focused credentials for in-demand jobs between 2019 and January of last year, according to the Ohio Lieutenant Governor John Husted. Technology is changing the type of work that exists, and we have to help people earn the skills that we need, Husted said. I believe we are doing as well as any Midwestern state can. But if we can produce more talent, we will attract more employees and we will create more jobs. About 150 companies in Butler, Champaign, Clark, Dark Green, Miami, Montgomery, Preble, and Warren counties were awarded $2.6 million for current and prospective employers or employees to get 2,866 job skill credentials through December, according to the state. Companies get reimbursed for up to $2,000 for each credential earned. The state's individual micro credential assistance program offers free tech-focused credential coursework for low-income and partially or totally unemployed people. But Ohio Governor Mike DeWine's proposed budget includes $70 million to pay for tech-focused credentials, and then improves the workforce efforts in economically distressed rural and urban areas, and it will collaborate with local partners to expand the state's skilled workforce program. Basically, we are doing a lot better than we were a few years ago, but I'm not going to suggest that we're doing everything that we need to get done in terms of outcome. We have to have people that have the best skills, and have the most up-to-date schools so the employers say, yes, I can grow here in Ohio, and we have the fucking talent. But there has been trouble filling jobs, but prior to the pandemic, the company's number one issue was difficulty finding the workers with the right skills. And that need and that need remains even after the recession left millions unemployed. Ohio had 307,000 fewer jobs in January than 1 year prior, according to the most recent U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics data on total non-farm employment. Nationally, the employment was down about 9.5 million a year over year over year in February. But we have a tremendous number of skilled workers who were working a year ago who are no longer working because jobs are unavailable to them, said Michael Shields, a researcher at the Policy Matters in Ohio. A huge factor that experts say has driven women in particular out of the workforce is the need to supervise children due to remote schooling or the shuttered child care. Other people leave the workforce after becoming discouraged about finding a job or that they retire. Employers who have a reputation for the robust safety protocols have less trouble. They have less trouble hiring people. Said Joni Crane, who's the vice president market manager for Manpower in Dayton. She said the higher pay used to lure workers will linger after the pandemic, but some employers say that the problem is the $300 extra weekly unemployment compensation people can receive because of the federal of the because of the coronavirus relief. This could in the end slower economic recovery, but there has to be a way to protect people who need it and to support people who need it, but not create a disincentive for people to go back to work. The economists say that the enhanced unemployment benefits and direct payments to families kept the nation out of an even worse economic crash last year because it allowed consumer spending to continue even as 22 million people lost their jobs in March and April. But how to find a job during the pandemic? The COVID-19 pandemic economic crisis basically threw millions of people out of work. But as the economy improves and vaccination rates rise, more jobs are opening back up. But here are some things to know about finding work and job training that will make you more competitive in your job hunting. Number one, job and family services offices in each county and the state offer robust resources linking people with jobs and training. And the state's newly at the newly redesigned portal is at ohiomeans.com. Number two, money is available to help income eligible people and dislocated workers get training through the government funded programs offered by states. And the county government businesses can also get training money. Number three, become proficient at networking online, including on LinkedIn to find companies and organizations you are interested in. Set up alerts on all